This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Monday the 20th will be Dr. Martin Luther King Day, a federal holiday all across the United States. It's been a federal holiday since 1986. For that occasion, Rebecca Onion at Slate dug up a remarkable document which was drafted by the Montgomery Improvement Association, which Dr. King was one of the leaders of, on December 19, 1956, announcing to the community that the bus boycott in Montgomery that had been going on for nearly a year was over after a Supreme Court decision saying, you know what, everybody of every race is allowed to ride the bus and sit wherever they want. The document is a list of suggestions of what people should do once they got on board those buses. It's all about nonviolence and instructions like do not deliberately sit by a white person unless there's no other seat. Try to get on board with a friend in whose nonviolence you had confidence. If you're cursed, don't curse back, etc. It's remarkable, and I'll put a link to it on the America Weekend Facebook page. My next guest wasn't there in 1956 with Dr. King, but a few years later joined the team and later became an advisor and one of the people who helped write the I Have a Dream speech. His name is Dr. Clarence B. Jones, who's had a distinguished career since the Civil Rights Movement in both finance and law, and I'm happy to have him on the show today. Dr. Jones, welcome to America Weekend.
Good morning. I'm glad to be able to speak with you this morning.
Let's go back to the days when you were advising Dr. King and helping him write speeches. I'm always very interested in process. Can you tell me what the process was of writing with somebody who was so eloquent?
Well, the process was very simply working together with a fellow by the name of Stanley Levison, who knew Dr. King before I did, is that it was inevitable with his speaking schedule and all of the demands on him having to raise money for the organization. He just simply couldn't, as a matter of time, respond to all the requests for him to speak. And so in my case, it started out really as just doing research, getting some background. For example, if he had to speak before the convention of the National Maritime Union, I would get some information exactly how long the National Maritime Union has been in existence, what does it do, what is its membership. Getting background information, and the process of providing information in information memoranda began to transform into drafting suggested ideas, the ideas in which he should express the information that had been provided. And that that escalated further. Got widened into after actually drafting ideas from the information for him to consider. Let me make it very clear, is that to the extent that any speeches that I worked on and provided with him, they were all Dr. Martin Luther King's speeches. They were not my speeches. I was simply a technocrat trying to provide him with the best means of expressing what he he wanted us to provide him with, you know, with basic information. He was an extraordinary, brilliant person. It can be said, as a matter of intellectual statement, he didn't, quote, need anybody to write speeches for him.
Yeah.
That's not the issue. I was simply someone that was part of a process to make it easier for him to deal with the various statements that would be asked of him in speeches asked of him. And what happened is that over a period of time, he developed a sense of trust and in the work that I would provide and Stanley and I would provide. And often, in most cases, what we would prepare for him would really be a codification or a summary of what we had already discussed with him, so that he was really reading from us what we had already discussed and he had suggested we put in written form. So there was some originality, of course, in what we would occasionally write, but most of it was his thinking. And and as I said, finally, he was the speechwriter. He was the speech spokesperson. I was just a facilitator.
Right. So he could put it into the words that he wanted and into the cadence that he wanted.
That
and
correct.
I know now you are a visiting professor at the University of San Francisco, and one of the things you do there is teaching the art of advocacy writing.
I have a course which I teach in the graduate school called the Art of Advocacy Speech Writing.
What's one of the lessons for people who are writing speeches today?
What's one of the lessons? Well, I guess the great lessons is that you have to have a great interest and discipline in studying the written word. In a word, I would say, if you wanted the best source of reference material for any speechwriter, two sources: the King James Version of the Bible and William Shakespeare.
Hmm.
Aside from that, you would have to, and then the course that I teach is really predicated on the following thesis, is that words are like colors of paint, like pastels, you know? That when an artist faces a blank canvas, he chooses a color of paint to put on the canvas to be part of the picture he is portraying. And it's that those colors cumulatively together that eventually make up the picture that he wants to present. Well, so it is with words. You have to choose the exact word, the precise word, to express the thought that you really mean. Words not accurately expressed can have a double meaning or not be clearly understood. So the art of advocacy speech writing is, in the first instance, having a great respect for the power of the written word. For example, the first part of the course that I teach, the students don't engage in any speech writing. What they do is they start reading some of the great speeches in history. In fact, the first homework, of course, involves reading Pericles' funeral oration during the Peloponnesian War. You read great speeches. You read Mark Antony's speech in William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. You read John F. Kennedy's inaugural address. You read things which are not that well known. Emile Zola's 3,000-word open letter to the President of France, Jacques, accusing the French military of trying to convict a Jewish Captain Dreyfus, for facts which were trumped-up charges. So, and including, of course, reading Nelson Mandela's 1962 speech that he gives as he's being convicted. Mm-hmm. For treason by South Africa. So there's the whole first part of the course is reading speeches in order to see the examples of the power of the written word.
And do these students that you're dealing with, Dr. Jones, they're graduate students, so they're in their 20s, do they understand what you and Dr. King and other civil rights leaders accomplished generations earlier?
I think if they did not do initially, when they came in, when they participated in the course, when they signed up, I think afterwards they did. And it's important. I'm pleased to have you ask me these questions. And he was indeed a profound orator. But as I reflect, had he lived, he would have been 85 years old this month. And I think not only about his great speeches, but I really think about the extraordinary legacy that he has left us. And I was interested in your opening remarks when you were reading, I guess, from an excerpt of a document, the Montgomery Improvement Association, about the emphasis on nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
To appreciate Dr. King within the context of our national holiday, one must understand that he was the 20th century's preeminent apostle of nonviolence. And that his legacy challenge today, and I say this whenever I have an opportunity for interviews or whether when I've been asked to speak somewhere, I'm represented by the American Program Bureau and various opportunities that come for me to speak around the country, I make the following points, that if he were alive today, that he would be calling our national attention to the existential threat of gun violence. He would be calling our attention to what obviously people are now paying more attention to, the issue of income inequality. He would, I see that the president, in a recent speech last month in Kansas at a high school.
Dr. Jones, I'm sorry I had to cut you off. We've got a hard break I've got to go to here. I really appreciated the opportunity to talk with you today. Thank you so much. Dr. Clarence B. Jones, once an advisor and speechwriter to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., here on America Weekend.
America Weekend.